Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Today on Inside Politics, he comes bearing gifts. President Biden is in battleground Arizona today, where he'll announce $20 billion in loans and grants for Intel to produce advanced computer chips, which could create thousands of new jobs. Plus, panic mode. That's what my colleague Caitlin Collins reports is happening inside Trump world as he scrambles to find a $500 million to cover the judgment against him in the New York fraud case. If he can't cough it up, the state in New York could start seizing his assets as soon as next week. And the world is celebrating International Happiness Day today. Here in the United States, a new survey shows Americans are much less happy than a year ago as the country deals with political divisions and an epidemic of loneliness. So what can we do? The author of The Amen Effect is here to help. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. We start in Arizona, where President Biden is on day two of a campaign swing through Western battleground states. Today, he'll be showing off the power of incumbency, campaigning and governing at the very same time, making a big announcement in a state he won by just little more than 10,000 votes in 2020. Arlette Sines is in Arizona. Arlette, what do we expect?
Well, Dana, President Biden in just a few hours will be here at this Intel facility outside of Phoenix, Arizona, as he's trying to tout the government investments the administration is making to try to boost domestic chip production here in the United States. It comes as the president is trying to convince Americans that his policies are starting to benefit them personally and economically at a time when he has struggled to sell some of these legislative accomplishments. These announcements, the agreement struck between the federal government and Intel today are stemming from that bipartisan CHIPS and Science Act that was passed back in 2022, an effort to really try to boost domestic chip production right here in the United States. Now, this award is the largest award that the U.S. has, that the federal government has given to a company relating to the production of chips. It includes $8.5 billion, an additional potentially up to $11 billion in loans for Intel to start modernizing, constructing, and expanding some of their facilities here in the U.S. That includes facilities in the states of New Mexico, Ohio, Oregon, and importantly, here in Arizona, a critical battleground state. The estimates from the White House are that this could create up to 30,000 jobs, and specifically here in Arizona, that could be over 33,000 manufacturing jobs, 7,000 construction jobs, and thousands of more indirect jobs that would be supported by this money. But it comes as the president has tried to argue that the U.S. needs to invest in this chip production, not just from an economic standpoint here in the U.S., but also a national security imperative to make the U.S. less reliant on countries like China. So the president trying to tout this investment here in Arizona today as he's trying to move the needle with voters' perceptions, especially when it comes to his handling of the economy.
Arlette, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. Let's talk more about this and much more. I want to bring in my great political panel, CNN's Melanie Zanona, Hans Nichols of Axios, and Nia Malika Henderson of CNN and Bloomberg. As we start, I do want to talk about kind of the notion of the power of incumbency, but I also want to say that I publicly shamed you for wearing Carolina blue last week. Yep. And so in solidarity, we are both wearing Duke blue.
I appreciate this moment, Dana Bash.
Okay, on to the important questions of our day. Nia, do you think that this kind of move, I mean, when you're president and you're running for re-election, you have a lot of bad, like dealing with a war in the Middle East that is not popular with your base. And you have a lot of tools in your tool chest.
Mm-hmm.
This
no,
is one of them.
I think that's right. You know, I mean, he sort of kicked off this swing with the State of the Union, right? That was another big tool in his tool chest, did well there. And so he's been going around to these different swing states that he has to win. You look at Arizona, barely won in 2020. He does really well there with Latinos, who are about 20% of voters there. Trump loses some GOP voters in 2020, about 10%. And so he goes there and he's essentially carrying a big, you know, bucket of jobs. The problem that I think that the Biden administration has had is that people have either forgotten or sort of never knew mm-hmm. about some of these big plans and deals they've made for infrastructure and the CHIPS Act. And so he goes there and he's reminding people, 30,000 jobs, you know, all of this investment. So it is quite good. And listen, I think this is a blueprint for what we're going to see mm-hmm. over the next 8 months. They've got to move the needle with voters who are like meh on this administration. So they're giving folks a reason to say this administration has done good.
And Hans, he's not exactly shy about what he is telling voters about what he needs from them, which is them to get out and support him, even though we're months away. Listen to the president's message.
You're the reason why, in large part, I beat Donald Trump. You know, I need you. I need you badly. I need the help. Kamala and I desperately need your help because, look, there's only about six or seven states that are going to determine the outcome of this election. There are toss-up states. This is one of them.
Yeah, Joe Biden is a retail politician. And one thing they always say about retail politicians is that you have to ask people for their vote. I'm sure that's something he learned in his first campaign. To the broader point, and Dana, I think yours is an excellent one, this idea of, like, it's the good and the bad of the presidency, right? You have a border crisis in Arizona that's creating negative headlines that this administration, this White House, certainly in the campaign, certainly doesn't like. And yet the president can make these discreet surgical visits and announce, it's not an infinite number of new programs they can talk about. I would just say, as a reporter that's going to be covering this, I suspect there's going to be a fair amount of fatigue because we're all going to write the same story over and over again, where the president travels to this state to make a billion-dollar announcement with X amount of jobs, which is to say, I'm going to create a formula in my Word documents to just say, Biden visit this week's state, this many jobs, and then move on.
Right?
It's my own little AI. Yeah. That's my contribution. Okay, and with that, you know.
Melanie.
Well, look, I mean, it's not just about jobs. He's also going to make a direct appeal to these key Latino voters. He is really at risk of losing them to Donald Trump. And I think the Biden campaign recognizes they can't take those voters for granted, especially in a state like Arizona, like Nevada. And one way he's doing that is trying to directly draw a contrast with Trump's hardline immigration rhetoric and also his policies. He's talking about how Trump recently said, you know, these migrants are not humans in his eyes, or saying that they're poisoning the blood of America. Those are the types of contrasts that the Biden campaign really wants to draw with the Trump campaign.
And you mentioned the votes in Arizona in 2020 and also the vote that we saw last night mm-hmm. because there was a primary there. And let's just put some numbers, specific numbers, on the point you were making, Nia. Let's start with last night. Trump won by almost 80%. Nikki Haley, though, got 108,108 votes so far. Nikki Haley's not running for president anymore.
No.
And this is a closed primary. So these are Republican voters who actively went out to protest Donald Trump. And so if you compare that, I mean, I'm certainly was no math major, but I can see the differences here. If you compare that 108,000 versus the 10,457 that Donald Trump lost by, it's 10 times.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a real danger for Donald Trump. Some of these people may stay home. Some of them, you know, will vote for Donald Trump. And listen, some of them are going to vote for Joe Biden. This is what they're saying. They are registering their distaste with Donald Trump. And the idea that over the last 4 years, the folks who sort of switched from Trump to Biden now have this great reason to go back to Trump after he's behaved the way he's behaved over the last 4 years, it seems a little unbelievable that you're going to have folks flip back to Trump. But listen, some may, but this is a real warning sign. And so far, Trump is doing very little to court those voters. I know at some point we're going to talk about what he's been saying on abortion, mm-hmm. But his last couple of days, I mean, the rhetoric out of his campaigns and even some of the people he's endorsed, this hasn't been great for those moderate Republicans who are already skeptical of him as a president.
And you know who else is probably looking at those numbers? Sherrod Brown, the Democratic senator in Ohio, because he's going to have to appeal to the moderate and independent wing of the Republican Party to win in a red state like Ohio.
Yeah, and we should say we did a lot on the in advance of
last night's results of that Ohio Senate Republican primary, Donald Trump's candidate did win there.
Yeah, and pretty handily.
Yes, and that was in large part because of Donald Trump's endorsement, and he got a boost from Sherrod Brown, who right. wants to run against him because Brown thinks that he is somebody who is more beatable. You brought up abortion, mm-hmm. so we have some other things to talk about with regard to other swing states. But I do think this is important to bring up, so let's talk about it right now. I want to, and this is what you were referencing, Nia, I want everybody to listen to what the former president said in a clear trial balloon about what he's considering as his own policy if he becomes president.
The number of weeks now, people are agreeing on 15, and I'm thinking in terms of that, and it'll come out to something that's very reasonable. But people are really, even hardliners are agreeing, seems to be 15 weeks, seems to be a number that people are agreeing at. But I'll make that announcement at the appropriate time.
We're talking about a national law yeah. that says abortion is allowed up to 15 weeks.
Yeah, that'd be a huge change in Republican politics to have a presidential candidate come out for a federal law. The Biden campaign is going to talk about Dobbs and Roe v. Wade and what Trump did, putting three Supreme Court justices on the court that reversed the decision. I suspect Donald Trump is so obvious what's happening here, right? And I'm going to get canceled for this, but it's like he's doing the striptease, right? He's like telling us what he's going to do, and then he's going to do it, right? And it's going to be very obvious, mm-hmm. right, in retrospect, that Donald Trump is going to settle down at mm-hmm. some sort of, whether or not it's 15 weeks, mm-hmm. he's directionally heading there. And now the question for the Biden campaign is, are they going to let him get away with it? And can they tag him with the three Supreme Court justices that he put on there that took away this federal right? That's the question.
I think you're exactly right. The other sort of part of the argument, the political argument that you are already hearing from Democrats, and you're going to hear even more from Democrats, is even if he doesn't get there to the end of your...
my metaphor that we could all agree.
Yeah, we could all. It's retired as of now. He said it. Yeah. Right? He put it out there as a possibility. So, in states like Michigan, for example, where in 2022, the last election, they put a constitutional right to an abortion on the ballot, and it won. So it is now in Michigan law. What you're going to see from Democrats in a swing state like that is, oh, you each voted for this right, and now you're going to have a president, if you elect Donald Trump, who is going to supersede that with a national law. And Democrats think that kind of fear will get people out to the polls.
And Trump also has taken credit for overturning Roe mm-hmm. v. Wade. So he's had to try to have it both ways. It's interesting, though, because privately he has said, according to our colleagues, that he does not see abortion as a political winner. So it's interesting to hear him now laying the groundwork for taking a stance. But you're so right, Dana, no matter what he does, Democrats are going to try to seize on this issue and try to link all Republicans to a national federal abortion ban, which they believe is not going to play well for
Republicans. And part of that is just the way he talks about abortion, right? I mean, that it's this big deal and, you know, you get an abortion at 13 weeks. Well, maybe it's 14 weeks. I mean, this is people's lives, right? These are women. It's women's bodies. And they feel some kind of way about these politicians who are trying to enter into these very private decisions about whether or not they want to start a family or have a bigger family. And so I think it's his language. It's very cavalier. It's very callous. And no matter what, he is still the architect of this mess of abortion policy that we have around the country at this point.
All right, everybody, coming up, could Trump Tower be on the block? What about Mar-a-Lago? Donald Trump is facing some tough choices with the looming deadline to put up $500 million in New York fraud case. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
Donald Trump is in panic mode. That's according to new reporting from my colleague Caitlin Collins, as he struggles to meet a Monday deadline to come up with nearly $500 million to cover the judgment against him in his New York fraud case. And just this morning, New York Attorney General Letitia James told a judge that he should ignore Trump's claim that he can't find an insurance company to help him pay. CNN's Kara Scannell joins me live from New York. Kara.
Yes, Anna. So this new filing from the New York Attorney General's office, they're saying to the judge that Trump is making this claim that he has, you know, tried to get a bond underwritten by 30 underwriters, that it's nearly impossible to get done. They're saying that the judge should ignore it. It's essentially too late, they say, for him to make this argument. But the Attorney General's office says if they are going to consider it, they want the appeals court to ask some more questions. Essentially, they want to know what efforts Trump actually made to get these, to get a bond. What were the terms that were put forward? You know, trying to get to the bottom of, did Trump just not like the terms, or was he really unable to get it? They also urged the appeals court to discount the testimony of some of the insurance broker and Trump's legal officer who, you know, had said that they made these efforts, that no one would underwrite the bond because they wouldn't underwrite it based on real estate. You know, Trump's lawyers are saying that maybe Trump should try to pool and get a number of underwriters to come together to underwrite a $500 million bond. They also suggested that Trump should have put up some of his properties with the court to secure this judgment. But, you know, this is still, as the clock is ticking, the ball is in the hands of the appeals court panel. They have to decide if they're going to grant Trump's motion to either allow him to post a bond that's less than $500 million or to say he doesn't have to post one until the appeal of this whole case plays out. Now, the deadline for Trump to come up with the bond is Monday. And if he doesn't, that's when the New York Attorney General's office can begin to try to enforce this judgment. That means they can try to seize bank accounts. They can try to seize some properties. They can start taking steps to move forward to enforce this judgment. Dana?
Kara, thank you so much for that. I want to bring in Bill Cohan of PUC, who has reported extensively on this. Nice to see you, Bill. Let's start with what Kara was just talking about, that Trump's attorneys say that he's tried very hard to get a bond, and it's not possible. Can you break down why he couldn't get one?
Well, Dana, thank you. Thank you for having me. He can't really get one because he's not a good credit risk, Dana. He hasn't been a good credit risk for a very long time. During the 90s, you know, six or so of his companies went bankrupt. So that is something that annoys creditors across Wall Street who have long memories. And he's also been known to not pay contractors and subcontractors and lawyers. So people remember that. And so when he's seeking a bond for more than $500 million, the risk of him paying, of him losing his appeals or his judgment against him, falls to those bond issuers, mm-hmm. not to him. And then they'd have to go after him if they don't pay, if he doesn't pay them. So, you know, they don't want to take that risk. Why should they? Why should any of but he take that risk at the moment? He's proven himself to be a very risky credit risk.
Okay, so let's take getting a bond off the table then, and yes. Let's look at his assets, because that is another way that he can pay this $500 billion judgment. And some of the assets that we're talking about, and we'll give some of what we think are their worth, Avenue of Americas, $500 million, 40 Wall Street, $270 million, California Street, which is in San Francisco, $125 million. Now, some of these he owns, some of these he has an investment in, so we can talk about that. And then also Mar-a-Lago, of course, $240 million, which I believe he owns outright. The Doral golf course, which he loves, $305 million, and the famous Trump Tower penthouse, which is apparently worth about $40 million. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, the two properties, the one on the Avenue of the Americas, the one in San Francisco, are owned by Vornado, a mm-hmm. different company. He owns a minority stake in those. I don't think he's going to have much luck with that minority stake, using that as collateral for a bond. I think also those prices are probably pretty high for both of those that you put on the screen. Mm-hmm. In his deposition, as you'll remember, in April of last year in this case, he said he had $400 million in cash and growing every day. That apparently doesn't seem to be the case, because if he had that kind of cash, he'd be using that as collateral. We're also talking about a pretty distressed market for commercial real estate in Manhattan these days. And so how quickly he can get the money, if you were have to sell these buildings, people would want to take advantage of that. It'd be a distressed sale. They'd try to take advantage. We also don't know how much leverage, how much debt is already on some of these buildings, mm-hmm. because, he's a private company. He doesn't have to disclose that, although some of that does get out. I think he has got debt and mortgages on all of these properties. Mm. So, what is the equity value of these things? That's another thing that, the bonders are going to look for. If you sum it all up, Dana, I'm thinking at this point he really isn't going to have much choice but to file for personal bankruptcy. And I know that's something he doesn't want to do, and has said he doesn't want to do, but it would stay this judgment. It would throw it all into bankruptcy court, and that would buy him the time that he so desperately needs this situation.
You think that's the most likely scenario, that he files for bankruptcy? That would be a big deal for a presidential candidate of any kind, but particularly one who is running on his prowess as a business person.
Yes, of course, but I think he's the master spinner, right? So he'll be able to spin that if it happens. I'm sure he'll spin that in a way that it'll appeal to his backers.
No question.
But I don't really see that he has any other choice at this point. I don't see who's going to give him this money.
Let me just ask you about that before I let you go, because it is, I guess, possible for him to get money from an outside investor or backer. He could get it from another billionaire that's more liquid. He could potentially get it from a foreign national. But then that, of course, brings in other problems when it comes to his presidential campaign and campaign finance laws.
Right. And I think even if you were to get the money from another billionaire, who would be, a bit crazy to do it, but it could happen, that might run afoul of federal election mm-hmm. laws as well. That would be a very big donation to a presidential candidate.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to take that off the list. Thanks for breaking it down. Appreciate it, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay. And coming up, back and forth on the border, a controversial Texas immigration law is blocked once again just hours after the Supreme Court gave it the green light. A hardline immigration law that would allow Texas to arrest anyone suspected of crossing the Texas-Mexico border illegally is on hold once again. This comes after a legal flip-flop yesterday. Just hours after the Supreme Court ruled Texas could take matters into its own hands, and an appeals court stepped in and said, no, not so fast. Ed Lavandera is on the ground in El Paso, Texas. Ed, this is a legal, an emotional, a political roller coaster. Bring us up to date on what's happening right now with this controversial law.
Right. Good luck to everyone trying to keep up with the quick changing developments in this story. But the oral arguments that have just ended in that appellate court. And this is we're expecting perhaps at some point another decision on whether or not, at least temporarily, whether or not this Texas law would be allowed to go into effect, while the legal case against it continues in the court system as well. So we'll kind of spare you all of those details, but just know that right now this law is not in effect, but it could change at any moment. And what law enforcement agencies across the state, Dana, are really grappling with right now as they closely watch these the legal whiplash going on here is trying to figure out exactly how they would implement this law and what kind of guidance they would give officers, sheriff's deputies across the state to handle all of this. And we've spoken with a number of different organizations across the state, and the prevailing theme we're hearing from them is that there doesn't seem to be a real appetite for officers, sheriff deputies to go out and just start asking people for immigration documentation and arresting solely on that. Many of the officers and the police chiefs and sheriffs that we've spoken with say if in the course of investigating other crimes like burglary or assault or anything like that, if this immigration issue comes up, then that law will be enforced at that time. But many of these officers say they look, there just simply isn't the manpower, there isn't the jail space. And on top of all of that, that, you know, enforcing immigration documentation issues is, they believe, the sole purpose of the federal law enforcement agents on the ground here in Texas. So, you know, many people here watching all of this closely as they kind of pay attention to what's happening in the courts. And, of course, all of this also happening at a time where we've really seen a dramatic de-escalation of the number of migrants crossing the U.S. southern border into the U.S. from Texas to California, almost a 50% drop since from December to January. And those numbers appear to continue dropping here in the month of February, although we don't have those official numbers just yet, Dana.
Yeah, that's an important point about the drop. I didn't realize it was almost 50% since December. That's quite interesting. Thank you so much. Keep us posted on the whiplash, which is exactly what it is going on
in
the courts.
We'll try.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Right now, a spectacle on Capitol Hill as House Republicans hold another impeachment hearing on an investigation that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Right now, the House Oversight Committee appears to be moving full steam ahead with a hearing of the impeachment of President Joe Biden, even as the inquiry itself seems to be stalled, marking yet another misfire from House Republicans on their never-ending quest to find evidence that President Biden committed impeachable offenses, which, to be clear, they have not yet uncovered. Hunter Biden was invited to testify today. He declined. You see there an empty chair that Republicans put there anyway, a fitting symbol for an investigation that so far is lacking in evidence, but is definitely full of theatrics. CNN's Manu Raju is joining me now from Capitol Hill. Manu.
Yeah, Dana, this hearing has Republicans have tried to show that there's new evidence to connect Joe Biden to Hunter Biden, his business activities, and tried to cite this witness that has been testifying, his Biden family associate, Tony Bobulinski. But they have so far failed to really connect the actions of Hunter Biden with Joe Biden or suggest that the president, or when he's acting as vice president, did anything corruptly. That's been really the focus of today's hearing. In fact, the large part has been a Democratic effort to really assail the credibility of Bobulinski, things that he had said about Joe Biden's interactions. They say simply does not have any evidence to back it up. In fact, there was a fight in this hearing today about whether or not they can examine Bobulinski's cell phone to back up some of the allegations that he has been making about Joe Biden and his connection with his son, which they said there's simply nothing to prove that the president, when he was vice president or when he's in public office, did anything corruptly. And the question, too, going forward is, where do Republicans take this? Right now, there's not much support within, at least not enough support within the House GOP conference to actually move forward with an article of impeachment. And I had put that question to the Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, whose committee would oversee articles of impeachment. And I asked him about how he can move forward without having the support within his conference.
It seems like there's waning support within your conference to move forward with actual articles of impeachment. Why not, you know, after this, pull the plug?
Well, the Constitution doesn't put a limit on how much time it takes to do your duty of oversight of the executive branch. So we're going to do our duty. I've always been driven by the facts. I think there's a compelling case there, but I've never said what we should do in the end. We're just going to keep doing our work, and then the conference will make a decision. That's how the process works.
But the question is, what does that mean, Dana? Some members want to actually have a vote. Others simply will say they will not support going ahead. And some simply just want to keep an investigation ongoing to keep a cloud of suspicion over Joe Biden's head. And others are fearful if they move forward with a vote and it fails, it would essentially absolve Joe Biden of any wrongdoing, which just shows you the challenges, any risks of going down the road of an impeachment inquiry. Ultimately, you're going to have to make a decision, and Republicans don't know what the decision is quite yet.
That exchange that you had with Jim Jordan was very, very telling, Manu. Thank you so much for that reporting. And my panel of reporters here is back. And Melanie, you just came from Capitol yeah. Hill. You were outside that hearing. I want to play a little bit of what the chairman of the Oversight Committee, Comer, said this morning.
The scam is simple. The Biden family promises they can make a foreign partner's problems go away by engaging the U.S. government. Joe shows up, shakes a few hands in front of his son, and says, quote, take care of my boy, or something similar. And the money flows. Joe Biden is the family's closer.
Those are big words, big sentences, big statements. But as Manu was saying, and we have to emphasize, we have seen no evidence to back that up.
Right. And even the witnesses that were testifying today, these individuals who in some cases were only loosely associated with Hunter Biden, all they said was that Joe Biden would sometimes pop in on phone calls or pop in on meetings when other business associates were present, but never discuss details of business deals. So they still don't even have the evidence to back it up, even at today's hearing, which we should point out is only the second public hearing they've had on impeachment. So the expectation right now is that they are not going to pursue impeachment articles. But as Manu was getting at, Republicans are in a dilemma right now, because if they end their impeachment inquiry without impeachment, they don't want to look like they're absolving President Biden of wrongdoing. And so they're trying to find an off-ramp, whether that's criminal referrals, a final report, some sort of legislation, or just dragging it out for the rest of the year. Right. And yeah. trying to politically damage Biden in any way. But that is where the Republican Party is at right now.
Methinks we're going to see a zombie investigation.
Look, Jim Comer is kind of telling us where it's going to go. And that is, Jim Jordan is mm-hmm. telling us where it's going to go. And that is the conference is going to decide. And we've all talked to enough Republicans to know that there aren't the votes there. Mm-hmm. So normally in politics, you have not an if, but a when question. But there's no if here. Mm-hmm. It's just more of a when question. Mm-hmm. And we know what the outcome is. So again, things can dramatically change. There can be new evidence and there can be a smoking gun. Mm-hmm. But there's not a whole lot of whiffs or any sort of suggestion that's the case. And so the end game is clear. It's just the question of the timing. And is there going to be an off-ramp?
Meanwhile, there is nothing short of theater when you're looking at most congressional hearings that are made for not just C-SPAN, but for cable TV. We mentioned at the beginning of the segment that the Republicans put an empty chair there for Hunter Biden, who they knew wasn't going to show up. Then on the Democratic side, you had Jared Moskowitz, Democrat who has been very outspoken about how he feels about this investigation. If you can't tell who that mask is supposed to be, it's Vladimir Putin trying to make a point. Obviously, it's, as I call it, cable catnip, but mm-hmm. what the heck?
It doesn't look like Putin to me either, but anyway.
It's a deal. Just go with it.
Listen, I think we do know where this is going to go. As you said, it will essentially be sort of a zombie investigation. They like the sort of conversations they can have on Fox News about this, even though lately I think the folks in Fox News are sort of like put up or shut up when Comer gets on there. But it is, they saw their president, Donald Trump, face very two legitimate impeachment hearings, and it obviously got kicked over to the Senate. And they want to do the same for Biden. They want to damage his reputation. They want to damage his son's reputation. And that's all they're up to. There isn't going to be any sort of impeachment. They didn't really have the votes to begin with. There are a lot of, particularly moderate Republicans who didn't like where this was going. But the sort of political damage they think they can keep incurring against Biden. What's interesting is, in listening to voters, particularly swing state voters, this isn't really breaking through with them. It is catnip for the Republican base. I'm sure Donald Trump loves it. But actual voters, it's very hard to follow what they've been up to over these last months.
Great conversation. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Coming up, Donald Trump doubles down on widely criticized anti-Semitic comments about Jewish voters. The political implications, not just for Jews, but for democracy. We'll explain after a break.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us. wherever you get your podcasts.
If you watched this program yesterday, you saw our coverage of former President Donald Trump's dangerous and anti-Semitic comments on a conservative podcast. After our show, he doubled down on those remarks.
I think that the Democrats have been very, very opposed to Jewish people. That's true. And to Israel. All you have to do is look at Senator Schumer. What he did with Israel is a disgrace. And I think Israel will probably not forget it very soon. It's a very sad situation.
Joining me now is Rabbi Sharon Brous. She is the author of the new book, The Amen Effect. First, I want to ask about what the president said. Rabbi, you think what Trump is doing is not just dangerous for Jews, but for democracy. Why?
Yeah, that's right, Dana. I mean, first of all, these comments are totally on brand for Trump. It is an attempt to really bully and shame American Jews into voting for him. And he's trying to stir fear and paranoia among American Jews. It's not going to work. American Jews historically vote very solidly Democratic and also really dislike intensely the former president. That's not going to change now. In fact, most American Jews don't share Trump or Bibi's vision for Israel, and certainly don't share Trump's vision for America. So the greater concern right now is not that he's going to be successful in convincing American Jews not to vote Democratic. The greater concern that I have right now is that anti-Semitism is not only dangerous for Jews, but is truly dangerous for democracy. And the reason why is because anti-Semitism really is a form of racism that functions differently from other racisms that we know well here in America. It's rooted in conspiracy theories about Jewish domination and about Jewish power. It's always been an excuse for why something other than the people who are in power are responsible for suffering in the world. And so throughout history, anti-Semitism has been used as a kind of wedge to break apart pro-democracy coalitions. And I think that's what he's trying to do right now, to stir up anti-Semitism, especially in a moment of political instability, to really break apart that civil rights coalition that has been so strong in this country for so many years.
Rabbi, you run an organization called ICAR in Los Angeles. It not only is a place of worship, but it's a place for community outreach. And I know that you delivered a sermon about anti-Semitism this past Sabbath. It's not something you usually do. Why did you decide to do that now?
Well, for many, many years since we built our community, I just felt that in an America in crisis, facing the crises of climate catastrophe, racism, white supremacy, anti-LGBTQ hatred, that really anti-Semitism was a bit backburnered in our progressive community. And at some point realized after 2017 that there had been a tipping point in the country and that we needed to address the centrality of anti-Semitism, particularly the way it was manifesting in the right and the danger of state-supported violence against Jews. Over the course of time, it's become clear to me that this is not a left versus right issue. Where is it more dangerous? Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing right now is that anti-Semitism is increasingly ubiquitous, that it's really appearing in both the right and the left. And I think this is a moment in which we have to stand together and say, we who care about democracy, we who care about building a just future, will not allow anti-Semitism to be used as a wedge to break apart the democracy camp that will only deliver a win to Trump and his authoritarian vision.
I want to ask, before I let you go, about making a little bit of a turn to International Happiness Day. The U.S. has dropped several places to 23rd in the world. Your book, called The Amen Effect, includes some practical tools to help people find joy. Can you just share a few quickly?
Yeah, I can. I just want to say joy is not selfish and joy is not escapism. Joy is a way of acknowledging the world as it is and nurturing our bodies and our spirits so that we can find the strength to work to build the world as it could be. So one of the practices of joy that I include in my book is a practice that comes from my dear friend Shifra, who does 18 minutes of joy a day. She takes a joy break, which is a way of allowing herself in body and in spirit to just embrace the possibility of what could be in the future. And I have taken on that practice in solidarity with her. And I invite us all to allow ourselves to access joy as a way of really nurturing the spirit so that we can be in this work for the long haul.
Okay. Try to do that here in Inside Politics. I don't know if we can make it up to 18 minutes, but that's a good goal. Thank you so much. Your book is called The Amen Effect. Thank you so much for coming on
thank
the program
you.
Today. And thank you for joining Inside Politics. We hope you have a happy day on this International Happiness Day. CNN News Central starts after the break.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.